As your attorney, I advise you to take a hit out of the little brown bottle in my shaving kit.
With the new iPhone, you can watch, listen, ignore your friends, stalk your ex, download porno on a crowded bus, even check your email while getting hit by a train. All with the new iPhone.
I was attacked.
By a monkey?
Nope.
Wendigo?
Nope.
Chupacabra?
Nope.
Chuds?
Nope.
Dr. Chud?
No.
Kill the body and the head will die. This line appears in my notebook for some reason.
Bottle Rocket, Punk House of Horror.
Believe in the boogeyman. Remark
Radio, the world's original all horror broadcast.
From the icy blackness comes an inhuman horror seeking warm blood, soft flesh.
Welcome to Remorgue Radio. Welcome to the world's original all-horror broadcast. Thanks for tuning in.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm your host, I'm here, part fool, part ghoul, all tuned, Dragomir.
He is Rotten Billy. Mean, surly, nasty, rude. He couldn't give a fuck about nothing. He's rocking and rolling, living fast, dying young, leaving a good-looking corpse, you know?
This week on the broadcast.
Argento's films, even if you're a fan of Argento, tend to run hot and cold with people. And for a long time, I didn't think Inferno was one of his strongest either. But I've since changed my tune on that because, I don't know, there's just something about that film I find very hypnotic these days.
DVD reissues of Plenty, Inferno, and more as our good friend Mike Felcher returns. Oh, yeah! Blood Spattered Guide talks to Martin Popoff, author of Black Sabbath, FAQ.
Black Sabbath, the bare truth about the unbelievable.
And the caustic critics are taking on Red Riding Hood. Really? That can't be right.
Until the blood moon wanes.
Wolf.
It can't
killed again.
Oh, spooky, kooky tunes en route this week from 999, which is really just 666 upside down. We've got Hot Lips, Messiah, Alice Cooper, Deadbolt, plus tons more fun to come on your home for horror, rock and roll. Remark, here's the Grave Ciders, I Love the Dead, let's go!
Dearly departed, we are gathered here tonight to pay our last respects to the passing of the light. The dead will come from miles around to join us for the show. But in the sea of zombies, it lived not long ago. The graveyard stage is set, the hearse rolls up outside. Crawling from the dead of night, the gravesiders arrive. The crowd works through a frenzy, monsters begging to be fed. Anticipating terror, this nightmare never ends. The feedback swell will signal the beginning of the feast. Give in to your hunger, satisfy the beast. And when this night of horror has finally reached its end, we'll dig up another town and do this all again.
Mike Felcher coming up with feedback right after the Screaming Tribesmen. They come from a land down under for a date with a vampire.
Want a date? Going out? Looking for some action? Need some company?
On Rumorg Radio.
I don't know where she comes from. She just wouldn't say. But we're going down to the graveyard at the finish of the day. She dresses up in black and wears a red rose in her hair. I know she is a demon, but somehow I just don't care. I got a date with a vampire girl tonight. I got a date with a vampire girl tonight. I got a date with a vampire girl. So tender as I fall under her spell. She makes me feel so good. I think I follow her to hell. I got a date with the vampire girl tonight. I got a date with the vampire girl tonight. I got a date with the vampire girl. She's alright. She's alright.
This is Jeff Lieberman, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
All right, so first of all, what is the state of the Church of Satan?
I was going to ask you about Wes Craven, and now I'm ashamed to.
Les Messman style.
Possibly the Antichrist.
Like a zombie character on Sesame Street. All of a sudden, it seems so irrelevant. Continue.
I speak nothing but the fucking English language. And if that's infamous, then
tough titters.
Alright, this is Feedback, and this week on Rue Morgue Radio, I thought it would be a good time to check in with our good friend, Mr. Mike Felcher from Red Chair Pictures, whom we haven't talked to since the first episode of the Rue Morgue podcast, at which point he told us about all sorts of lovely things he has in the works as far as DVD reissues. A couple of them have since surfaced. So how you doing, Mike?
Doing good, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. So you heard our review of Inferno, correct?
Yes, I did.
Yes, and you were really appreciative of it, I believe.
About 50% of it.
Yeah, and the 50% being?
Your 50%.
And the 50% you didn't like?
The other guy.
The other guy.
That's all I'm going to refer to him as, the other guy.
The other guy. Was there a particular comment that stuck out for you as a point of contention?
No, pretty much it was the whole thing.
Just everything he had to say.
Yeah, yeah. It was like a tie for all. Every comment he had to say just kind of irked me.
Every syllable wounded your fragile ego with equal ferocity.
Well, I don't know about fragile. Yeah, no, it is pretty fragile. Yeah, I would go with that.
All right. So, speaking of Inferno, though, I do have to. I actually don't even remember the review, so I don't even know what his comments were that bothered you.
You're in
Rue Morgue Radio Horror Core right now. Should this have come out on Blu-ray?
It's hardly worth saying it's out in special edition again. The only reason why it's out Blu-ray and by Blue Underground is because there's so much blue coloring in this movie, they just thought they'd run with the whole...
Okay. He's not a fan of the movie.
No, but I can understand not being a fan of the movie. Argento's films, even if you're a fan of Argento, tend to run hot and cold with people. And for a long time, I didn't think Inferno was one of his strongest either. But I, since changed my tune on that because, I don't know, there's just something about that film I find very hypnotic these days.
And at times, I think I actually feel a presence, as if someone were in the room with me.
Who lives in this damned house?
Someone. Waiting.
But who?
You are being watched.
Actually, I think the special features on the disc help facilitate a greater appreciation for the film.
Well, I appreciate that.
Especially in its use of architectural design.
Well, that was, just Lee McCloskey was such a surprise. Sometimes when you interview actors, they're... they just have a few things to say about what it was like, and that was pretty much it. But he had a whole nother level to his experience on that movie because he's now a well-known, very acclaimed visual artist himself. So that ended up being a real treat.
Well, obviously, one of the things when you look at that thing, I almost wanted a whole other special feature on just his apartment.
Yeah. I mean, it's just painted head to toe, floor to ceiling. It's all painted, and just it's an amazing... They were there for another hour or two after the interview was over. Because they just wanted to hang out and talk to him and just experience what that studio was like.
Well, he's got like a study with a stacked library of books on shelves on the walls, but he's painted over everything as though it was just a painting surface. So it's just very strange and very bizarre, bordering on the mentally suspicious.
It's mental.
Yeah, but he comes off as a very lucid guy, so I don't... Look, all artists are eccentric to some degree, and certainly he's no exception, but he and his wife both were just wonderful to deal with, and again, that's one of those things I love about doing what I do, is that those unexpected interviews that you're just like, wow, that ended up being a lot more interesting and informative on a whole other level than I thought it would be.
Now, Deep Red also came out. Now, you did the cover, but I believe that was the extent of your involvement in the release.
Yeah, it was sort of a Hail Mary design I came up with because I had never liked any of the covers that had been done before, and I just sent it over to Bill over at Blue Underground and said, how about this? It was based off the original theatrical art for the U.S., and he went for it. And so that ended up being the first cover that I've ever designed that actually got used. I've done a couple kind of comps for other releases, but it was just kind of temporary things, like when I worked in Anchor Bay. But, you know, they had talented people working there. They didn't need me getting in there, gumming up the works. But this just kind of was a fluke thing. It just happened, and I'm very pleased that it's out there.
Now, speaking of covers, you are also, and I got to see this because you posted it on Chomebook, but you're also doing the cover for the Zombie reissue, the Lucio Fulci film.
Yes, I did. I had an idea for the cover on that, and they were exploring different options. Because, I mean, that movie's had a ton of different artwork over the years. And it was just a matter of, I had this idea. It was kind of influenced by the Raiders of the Lost Ark poster, the original Amsel art, where you have the, you know, Indiana Jones on the front, and all along the border around him are collages of images and people from the movie. And so I thought, well, why don't I do that for Zombie? So I just kind of experimented with it, and again, just sent it over there as one of the ones for them to consider, and they ended up going with it.
Now, you have a personal collection of poster art, right? That's quite extensive.
It's pretty extensive, yeah. I mean, and I don't have as much as I used to, just because I ran out of room, and I was like, am I ever going to hang the poster for Sodbusters with Kris Kristofferson? I don't think so. So it's like, I need to get rid of some of this stuff. But yeah, I still do have quite a few.
Sodbusters. It was a time of frontier justice, when good, honest men worked the soil for turnips.
Now, why turnips? I don't know.
All you do is drink and pee and drink and pee and then kill somebody.
Sodbusters.
I noticed you wrote a little comment when you went to see Super 8 that you mentioned how irritated you were because that movie takes place in the 70s and the kid's got a Dawn of the Dead poster on his wall, which you said, okay, I can buy that. But the problem you had was it was clearly a reissue from the 80s.
Again, it's one of those geek laments that you have, and I was actually more upset with myself for being that upset about it. Because it happens right at the beginning of the film. You see a kid's bedroom. He's got all the stuff. This film takes place in 1979. So I can believe that he would have a Dawn of the Dead poster on his wall. I used to purloin, you know, movie posters from the local movie houses all the time. I can buy that. But what I cannot buy is that he'd have a borderless, non-theatrical size poster complete with New Line Cinema merchandising logo, which only happened in the 2000s when they acquired the Dawn of the Dead license, on glossy stock with unnatural fold lines. That's a bunch of bullshit. It just, right off the bat, I just went, reprint, and it took me out of the movie for 5 minutes. And again, it was annoying to me because it's like, this is a very simple thing. I think you guys could have gotten a reprint that at least looked like the real thing rather than some, you know, fake-ass thing you could buy at Kmart.
Well, maybe that conversation took place, but I could imagine the response being, who the fuck? What kind of deranged mental case would even know the difference?
I'm not the only one, though. I know several other people have pointed this out. And so I'm not the only deranged lunatic out there. Although, they you are essentially correct.
Check out Mike's website for more information about some of the DVD reissues he's working on, including Scott Spiegel's Intruder for Synapse Films and Zombie and House by the Cemetery for Blue Underground. He's also hard at work on what is potentially the biggest project of his career thus far, the definitive making of documentary for Evil Dead 2, scheduled to be released probably next year as part of a Blu-ray 25th anniversary reissue extravaganza special edition. www.redchairpictures.com.
Thunder. Estrata. Amantos.
Ibrex. Gut. Nosferatus. Kanda. Amantos. Kanda.
Hey ho, have you heard of a show called Rumor Radio?
So here I go with my radio.
Tune in,
too loud, you're too old. It's Remorgue Radio from Buy a Gun, Get a Free Guitar. Here's a new tune from Deadbolt, Hillbilly Zombie.
In the backwoods, there was a still. A batch of evil moon went at the 100 of folk around here. They died, and that's not all. They soon came back to kill us all. Now, the call goes out. Y'all get the hell out of here.
This is Governor Clyde Ogletree. What we have here is a situation, a state of emergency.
Oh my God!
Now hold on. What we have is a bunch of the mountain folks said they're coming on down from Blue Ridge out of the river Cherry Log area over by Buyeta. They seem to be deceased and still walking. Yes, I said deceased and still walking. No, it is not a vampire or a mummy. It is said to be much of a zomba. I have Sheriff J.T. Buford holding here with the to better explain. Come on up here, Sheriff.
Thank you, Governor. What we have here is an unprecedented emergency here. Apparently, Hillbilly is dead from a poisonous batch of corn liquor and any nigga coming out from the hill.
Huh?
I've never seen a zombie situation like this before down low day.
Is it possible to kill them, JT?
Only way to kill the son of a bitch is to shoot them in the head.
What I personally like to see is a dead zomba.
Do we need silver bullets, Governor?
No, that's the werewolf, dummy.
The town's folks stood up. They grabbed the guns and went out to the street. They shot him. Zombies down until it was complete.
Tomb? What time is it, Tomb?
Oh, Tom. Tom. You're up to something, aren't you?
It, my friends, is time to check in with our little leprechaun of the latest horror happenings. There's my chippy. Hey, Shannon. What's going on?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but Tomb already has his spot all picked out where he's going to be hanging out to check out the royal couple. That's right. He is a royal watcher. Hey, everybody, I'm Shannon, and I've got what's happening horror-wise from around the world. Bloodthirsty Thursdays are back. This Thursday, June 30th, it's a Phantasm party. In July, it's Sleepaway Camp at Draft House Westlakes in Texas. For more info, check out their Facebook page by looking up Kelly Warren Hammett. July 3rd, This Is Death Valley Constellations amongst the cool guys at the Poor Alex, Toronto. It's a night of metal music from Amongst the Deceased, Falling Forward, Don Valley, and many others. The show starts at 5:30 and it goes until midnight. For more info, check out PoorAlex.com. And July 17th, the Viscera Film Festival in LA. It's a horror film fest that showcases women horror filmmakers. That includes movie showing, special guests, an award ceremony, Q&As, and a bloody carpet event. Some of the movies being shown: Bloody Bunny by Molly Maddox, Nursery Crimes by Laura White, and The Ghost and Us by Emily Carmichael. For more info, you can check out visceralfilmfestival.com. And if you know something that's happening horror-wise and you want the whole world to know about, send me an email, shannon@rumorgradio.com.
Hey, thanks, Shannon. We love you long time.
Well, that's what the Asian porn star said to me last night.
I can really relate to that.
We've got the Blood Spattered Guide coming up. Stay tuned. Who's this?
Alice Cooper.
Formerly Warmer from Dada on Rumored Radio. Dig it.
In an upstairs room, under lock and key, it's my brother formerly. All the mops and brooms keep him company. Misconceived of the family.
Alice Cooper, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio, and you better listen, because I know where you live.
Okay, next guest!
Night is my domain.
Hello, I'm Lisa Ladouceur. I'm your blood-spattered guide to music on Rue Morgue Radio.
Swing!
Swing!
Tentpole! She's a babe!
She's magically babelicious!
And if you listen to the program every week, which I hope you do, you know that I know a lot of things. But one thing I'm not an expert in is heavy metal. However, I do know someone who is. His name is Martin Popoff, and he's written, I think, over 30 books. He's written in-depth and extensively about Judas Priest and Deep Purple, Blue Oyster Cult, Voivod. He did a book about the artwork of Iron Maiden, all about Eddie and Derek Riggs, so he knows his metal.
Iron Maiden? Excellent!
His brand new book is about Black Sabbath. It's called Black Sabbath FAQ, 400 pages of every bit of trivia you'd want to know about the recordings, who played on them, and of course, all of the horror tidbits about Black Sabbath. I know you've been dying to ask, so I'm going to ask Martin on your behalf. Martin, thank you for joining us on Rue Morgue Radio.
Hey, well, thanks for having me, Lisa.
Before I get into the trivia stuff about the band, I want to know how you first were exposed to Black Sabbath and what your impression of them was in terms of, like, how much heavier or scarier they may have been than other stuff you'd heard at the time.
I got into Sabbath, I would have been about 10 years old. This would be 1973. It was much easier to get into bands like Kiss and Ted Nugent than it was to get into Black Sabbath. Ozzy was kind of frightening, and the cover art was, and it was just a little harder to understand than other stuff. So, you know, even though first time we heard Sabbath, basically became fans for life, but really, you're always a little scared of them, that's for sure.
What do you think made them so scary to you as a young person when you first heard them?
Well, right off the bat, even before you get to the visuals or the lyrics, the music was kind of doomy. I mean, these were the guys that invented a genre to be called doom metal. But at the time, I mean, Tony had this way of kind of creating these black sheets of chords, or black sheets of wind, as Man of War would call it. It just always sounded very ominous. The lyric matter was scary. And then, yeah, you get to the album covers, and right there in 1973, it's got to be, like, one of the scariest album covers that has ever been made, and you know, that was the Sabbath Bloody Sabbath cover. Yeah, I mean, just everything about them was much, much darker and English and foreign than, you know, the boogie rock that was so much easier to get into as a little kid.
Now, I want to ask you about that album art, because it is iconic, and I know you have some good stories about it, but first, can we start with the name? You know, you can read about in Wikipedia how they saw the movie Black Sabbath on a marquee and changed their name, took it from that, but is that story true? Do you have any good sort of tidbits about why they called themselves Black Sabbath?
Yes, it's essentially true. I mean, they were into Hammer horror. There wasn't a lot on TV, there weren't a lot of movies, but they had ready access to this British stuff. So I think they kind of came out of this movie theater one day and looked at each other and said, you know, no one's really writing music that would scare the pants off people. I mean, we don't really hear this kind of lyrical matter out there. Why don't we just, like, write horror movie songs, essentially? And that kicked off the whole thing. And the name, you know, the name is very sinister sounding, so there was your first signal, and then you had the first album cover with the witch on it, and it was off to the races.
How much did that freak out the authorities at the time? Because people my age will remember the controversies around Marilyn Manson.
Now your freak flag's flying! Let the freak out begin!
People a little bit older might remember the Filthy 15 and the controversies around Venom, let's say, or Twisted Sister. Were the authorities in an uproar about this? Did this cause them problems, or did it just help them sell a lot more records?
Strangely, it wasn't that big a deal. I mean, they do come up with these stories. They always remember stuff about getting picketed now and again. But there wasn't a whole lot of venom thrown at Sabbath for this. They were more scared of the actual witches and covens and warlocks and things who would come to the shows and say, hey, listen, you guys and us, we're kind of the same. We got to stick together. You got to join our thing. You know, they were, you know, they said the crazies. There were more crazies on the dark side than there were on the light side. But it just, for some reason, it seemed like maybe rock was not nearly on the radar. People were not as scared of it as they seemed to be when all this came up again in the 80s and, as you mentioned, up into the 90s.
You've written about Black Sabbath extensively in the past. You had a Black Sabbath book out previously called Doom Let Loose.
Yeah.
So what was there left for you to discover?
Well, yeah, it's not so much what did I learn, but it's more like where can I go off on a tangent and write a complete chapter about, such as that there is a whole chapter there of delving into bands such as Covenant, Black Widow, which were even more satanic.
You know what, Martin? I'm going to stop you because I think this is fascinating stuff and it makes a perfect part two. Would you mind if we sort of like had you back next week and sort of probed you further about some of the more satanic bands that existed around Black Sabbath?
That sounds great.
Awesome. Martin Popoff, would you like to give us your pick for a really terrifying Black Sabbath song that we should play for our listeners?
Wow, let's go with Hole in the Sky off of Sabotage, which is probably my favorite Sabbath album. It's just a massively rumbling, doomy masterpiece.
Masterpiece of Doom on Rumorg Radio. This is Black Sabbath. Thanks, Martin. We'll see you next week.
Let's do it.
Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath, Black Sabbath. Sunday, Bloody Sunday. Hey, here's Hot Lips Messiah. Stay tuned, Fiends. Lots more show to go. Feedback at Lance, tearing up Red Riding Hood. Coming up right after Don Henson and the Rigor Mortician's A Werewolf Fought Toothy.
Now gather round, kiddies. I'll tell you something juicy about this dance you call the Watusi. You think it's something new. Well, that's not so. It all really started 400 years ago at the graduation party for Transylvania High back in 1565. We were swaying to the music of Lawrence Wolf and its bubbly, bloodthirsty jive. 23 skidoo. A she-wolf named Rhonda tooled in on a Honda, a quite unexpected call. The hair on her chin parted into a grin. She said, "You bats haunt him at all."
What's better than Lawrence Wool?
Tennis shoes.
There's a place down the street past Transylvania West. Let's make it down there right now. We'll know we're at the bloody a-go-go when we hear a werewolf's howl. Got inside, and there on the floor, what we saw gave us quite a fright. 150 wiggling wolves, man, it was out of sight. We immediately called the head werewolf over to our table to ask him what was going on.
They're doing the werewolf what to see.
get all their energy. Don't you know there's a flea epidemic? Sounds, let's split. This gig is nowhere.
It is a different bag. Move.
This is Nick D'Amici, actor and writer of Stakeland, and you're listening to Rue Morgue Radio.
The Caustic Critic.
Controversial. Unrelenting. It's brutal. It's nasty.
Sensational.
The worst of the worst.
Offend everyone equally.
Bowling.
They're real.
This stuff shit scrapes off the bottom of its shoes.
They're mean.
So what was the actor's name?
Oh, God, what a plank he is.
They're here.
Are you ready? It's time for the Caustic Critic.
They're here.
All right, this is feedback. And this is Pissed Off Lance. Sorry, Lance. What is wrong with you? I really apologize. No, there's... You know what? I do owe you an apology. Yes, you do, sir. I really do. Yeah. But listen, I watched this fucking piece of shit, and I'm like, okay, there's no way we're going to review this. Why am I even watching this? To tell you the truth, I couldn't really watch it all. I had to hit the fast forward button. You made me drive to your house on a day Saturday. You, I have to be perfectly honest with you, the only way I felt I could redeem myself for having suffered through a fast forward viewing of this piece of crap was to at least inflict the misery on another human being. It's like the curse. You passed it on to me, and I've got to pass it on. So we can commiserate after the fact. Oh my God. So basically, you went all through that just so you could help me therapeutically get over the experience. You're welcome. The retina wounding trauma. Wow. Of Red Riding Hood, the updated riff on the classic fairy tale, which hit DVD and Blu-ray on June the 14th through Warner Brothers, starring the absolutely drop-dead gorgeous Amanda Seyfried and a poor disgraced Gary Oldman once again. I feel so sad for that guy. You know, like, the thing is with Gary Oldman, rewind back to the 90s. You saw Gary Oldman's name in the credits. You knew you were in for something special. Oh, yeah. It brought an instant amount of excitement to it. Yeah, totally. It's like, man, you know, even his like little cameo in True Romance elevated that film.
Man, that TV over there, since you've been in the room, is a woman with her breasts just hanging out.
You ain't even bothered to look. You've just been clocking me. I know I'm pretty, but I ain't as pretty as a couple of titties.
Even his little cameo in Hannibal, he just had that cachet about him. A totally mysterious, incredible, charismatic screen presence who just brought excitement to any project that he was in. Oh, no, this guy's a total fucking star. He's a character actor that, yeah, you know, for Hannibal, I didn't even know that was him. Yeah, because a lot of people didn't. I don't even think he was credited. I'm not sure, but I'm not even sure he was credited. Even... like JFK.
I really don't know what this situation is about. Nobody has told me anything except that I'm accused of murdering a policeman.
Just movies like that. Fucking just rules. And then something happened. And then happened. Sid Nancy, who's the god in that movie.
Oi, how'd you spell holiday?
S-H-I-T.
Dear man, having a lovely...
And then what did happen? He just turned into this, like, totally phoning it in, paycheck fucking actor, like Robert De Niro, like a lot of those once great acting icons. I don't get it, but I just weep.
I can really relate to that.
I weep every time I see him in roles like this. Well, I see his name on the credits after this, I run. Seriously, I just turn around.
My wife's name was Penelope. She gave me two beautiful daughters. We were a very happy family. We lived in a village like this. And like Daggerhorn, ours was plagued by a werewolf. I had cut off one of its front paws. I thought it might make a clever souvenir, and so I took it home, and there I found my wife with a bloody rag wrapped around her wrist. And when I opened my sack, the werewolf's paw was gone. I told my girls the werewolf killed their mother. Well, that was a lie. I could.
You know, to tell you the truth, Amanda Seyfried, in a blisteringly boiling red cloak, cast against a moody, bluish, moon-ridden fairy tale backdrop, that works for me. I had to see this.
Only if she's naked in it.
I'm in the mood for love simply because they're naked.
But she's such a beautiful, kind of ethereal...
No. Actor. She sparkles.
Only because they're naked.
I'll see you in a few.
I know good girls aren't supposed to hunt rabbits or go into the woods alone. But since we were kids, he always had a way of making me want to break the rules.
Peter!
She sparkles. She sparkles,
well, you know,
okay?
What I didn't know it was directed by the chick who did Twilight.
You know what? I was watching the extras.
I had no idea.
I can't even look at that director.
The extras.
See, if you had watched the extras, then you would have known that we could have saved ourselves so much, because there is an extra in this. I'm surprised they put it in here. There's an extra, on the Blu-ray at least, where you can watch the whole movie in 73 seconds. They do the whole movie in 73 seconds, which, Stuart, is 72 seconds too long still.
We lived in a village like this.
It's still too long.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, there was a point where I hit the fast-forward button, and even the scenes that sort of initially sold me on the film, of Amanda Seyfried, like, walking through the woods, and the snow's falling, and the backdrops are fantastic, and she's got that, like, sparkling red cloak.
Sparkling.
I still had to fucking fast-forward that
crap. You know why? Because you're not 11. I'm not 11 either, so that's why this movie sucks for us.
No, but even when I was 11, I couldn't have tolerated this.
Wow.
So I'm watching it, and it's such an awkward updating of the classic fairy tale of Red Riding Hood, where all the sort of main narrative points are referenced, but in a different, weird way, and it's just like becomes a tedious exercise in seeing how a classic tale can be sort of transmuted into this pile of crap.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it going, oh my god, they're just trying to rip off Twilight.
Well,
because
yeah,
she's basically caught between two lovers, and it becomes this sort of romantic triangle played out exactly like Twilight, with two totally hot, generic looking cardboard cutout fucking dudes who I couldn't even tell apart from one another. Honestly, I was getting confused.
Because you're not 11, okay? You're not an 11 year old girl. That's all that matters.
She's been arranged to marry the one guy, but she's in love with the other guy.
Who may or may not be a werewolf and blah, blah, blah.
Exactly.
I didn't tell you?
Tell me what?
They've arranged for you to marry Henry Lazar. Do you want to marry him?
You know I don't.
Prove it.
How?
Run away with me.
Where would we go?
Anywhere you want. The ocean.
That's your solution to everything, to move under the sea. It's not gonna happen.
Not with that attitude.
But honestly, I couldn't tell them apart on screen. It took me a while till they showed up in the scenes together. So I'm confused going, she loves him, she doesn't love him, like, she has to marry him, she wants to run away with him, what
I'm
the
sorry.
Fuck's going on?
This was, to me, this was like this cross between The Village meets Twilight, and some of the sets are so obviously sets that it was just
so bad.
Filmed in Canada,
vibrancy. It's so full of artifice, you don't believe it for a second. The point of no return, where I proceeded to hate-fuck my remote control button, was that dance, the village.
Oh, my God.
Celebrates.
All the they got musical instruments, and they're all dancing.
But it's like the hard rock, emo rock.
I know, I felt
shit
like they're at a rave. They got those girls with the fireballs flowing around. I was like,
Amanda Seyfried is doing like a sleazy lesbian dance with another chick to make her boyfriend jealous.
Jealous.
It's like, hang on. Is this a medieval village? What the fuck is this? This is preposterous.
Absolutely ridiculous.
We lived in a village like this.
It's mental.
Because you're not an 11-year-old girl. Enough said, man. We're giving this thing way too much, like, even talking about it on the radio.
I know, we're idiots.
And you know what's the worst thing is now, we can't even pass on the curse to make ourselves feel better by telling other people to watch it.
Take it easy, friend.
I said we should stick together, and you left us, and my father is dead because of it.
Please don't do this.
Christ.
You keep your hands off her, I'll cut them off.
Peter.
I recommend this one.
I do too.
I highly. If thumbs you up for
there
me.
You go. Two thumbs up from the Caustic Critics.
So until next time, this is Feedback saying, run out, rent, buy, watch Red Riding Hood. Don't hit the fast forward button. Experience it. The full 90 minutes of deliciousness that is Red Riding Hood.
And this is Last Chance Lance saying, not only watch it once or rent it once or buy it once, do it two or three times because, ladies and girls...
But be a fucking mook like Lance and watch the special features as well.
It sparkles.
I'm in the mood for love.
Who's that I see walking in these woods? Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood.
Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf would want.
Let's play some game.
Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girl should go walking in the spooky old woods I love. Just to see that you don't get chased, I think you ought to walk with me for a ways. What full lips you have, you should look somewhat bad. So until you get to grandma's place, I think you ought to walk with me and be safe. I'm gonna keep my sheep suit on until I'm sure that you've been shown that I can be trusted walking with you alone. Little Red Riding Hood, I'd like to hold you if I could, but you might think I'm a big bad wolf, so I won't.
Listening to Remog Radio Fiends, that's it for our show. It's time for us to go. You can follow me on Twitter at ToomDragomir and check out YouTube.com/ToomDragomir for Toom TV. Don't worry, we'll come back.
Come back!
Everybody dies, don't they? But some come back. Isn't that so?
Thanks for tuning in, friends, to Rumor Radio. Until we meet again, adios.
The worms crawl in and the worms crawl out. The ones that go in are lean and thin. The ones that come out are fat and stout. Your eyes fall in and your teeth fall out. Your brains come tumbling down your snout. Be merry, my friends, be merry.
Very strange and very bizarre, bordering on the mentally suspicious.
Damn right.
We lived in a village like this.